batch of two will have had RSV. So let's learn a little bit more about that. And who better to do so with than GP Dr. Kieran O'Farrell. Good morning to you, Kieran. Thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning. How are you doing, Greg?
I am good. So before we talk about how much of it we are seeing, talk to us about RSV, how it sort of maybe generally affects younger people how it can progress in some.
Sure. Well, I suppose it's a common respiratory virus. We see it every winter. And in most people, it causes cough or a mild cold. However, it can be more significant in infants, particularly those under two. And in that group, it is the biggest cause of hospitalization for acute respiratory illness. So in that younger age group, it can cause a more severe illness.
And why would there be such little knowledge about it? You know, almost half of parents haven't heard of it. Is it because we haven't really attributed a name to it? Or if I take my toddler to you, Kieran, would you say, right, well, he's got a little something or other, no point giving him an antibiotic at this stage, take him home, monitor him and look out for these signs, and if you see them, bring me back. But we don't really call it RSV. Is that why we don't really know it?
Yeah, I think so. I suppose for us as GPs, it's something we see all the time every winter. So RSV is the virus that causes the illness, but the illness can vary from person to person. So the most common illness that it causes is one called bronchiolitis, which is an inflammation of the small airways of the lungs. But it can also cause a viral pneumonia, as well as a host of other things that we typically kind of link with the common cold. So a cough, runny nose, fever, all those type of things. And as GPs, we can't actually test for the virus. So the figures that we see all the time and the current peak that we're seeing relates to hospitalizations, because when children end up in hospital, they get tested and then the RSV cases are confirmed. So in general practice, we don't call it RSV because we're never sure that that's what it is, but it can cause a host of respiratory illnesses. And I suppose the important thing for us is that it's a virus, so it doesn't need any specific treatment. So in most cases, we're just giving parents general advice in terms of managing them, and we're not giving them any specific treatment. So we often don't use a specific name for it, and part of that might be our fault, but in general, we're talking about a respiratory illness, and we're just giving general advice in most instances.
I mean, obviously, you know, parents, guardians come in, they want to leave with something. Do you know what I mean? That's kind of the way we've managed to get an appointment. We've gone in, you check the child over. We kind of want to leave with something to make them bring the temperature down or stop the cough or whatever. But generally speaking, with your average case, you wouldn't, or would you prescribe anything?
No, for most instances, there's no treatment other than supportive treatment. So the main thing that we offer as healthcare professionals is advice, guidance, probably laying it out for parents of what to expect in the days ahead and when they might need to either come back to us or seek further care. So my typical advice to parents when I suspect that a child has bronchiolitis is to tell them that it's likely to get worse for maybe 3 to 5 days, and what to look out for in terms of red flags and when a child is too unwell to continue to manage them at home.
Right, talk to us then about what we could look out for, because at the same time, through this conversation, parents might feel, well, there's no need for me to go to the GP at this point, because I was listening to Dr. O'Farrell and he said it should clear up itself, but it can go the other way in a small amount of cases as well, and that's really why we are talking, to either get children into hospital sooner than the ordinarily would, or maybe even to prevent that hospital visit. So what is okay? What can we care for at home? And then when should we start thinking that, right, maybe the little one needs a bit of attention?
Yeah, so I suppose the particular people we're kind of most concerned about and the ones that most likely end up in hospital are those smaller infants, so particularly those under 6 months of age. But in any of them, I suppose the things that I tend to advise people to look out for are their breathing. So if you feel that they're struggling with their breathing, and often with bronchiolitis, they breathe faster, and it's watching out to make sure they're not breathing too fast or struggling with their breathing.
Now, so, would we see in that instance sort of what might appear to be increased belly breathing?
Yes. So I suppose the things you watch out for in an infant where they're struggling are, if you look in their neck here, you can see them pulling in on their trachea. Under their chin, you can see that pulling in when they're struggling. If you look in their belly, you can see under the rib cage that they'll be pulling in there as well. And that general increased work of breathing. So, you know, most parents are fairly good at noticing that their child is breathing faster.
The reason why I want to emphasize this, Kieran, is because especially if you're a new parent, you know, you're up to high dough with, a lot of us are up to high dough with the breathing for the first while anyway. And you know, the way a baby's breathing can sort of change in its pattern and all. So it's good to have those really strong indicators that you talk of, because we'd be second guessing ourselves, of course.
Absolutely. And I suppose that's where we come in, particularly in those young infants. If you have a child who's struggling under 6 months, most of them will end up coming to their general practitioner and getting reviewed. And as I said, it is the biggest cause of hospitalisation in under twos with acute respiratory illness as well. So we know that a significant proportion of them do go to hospital, and most of that is for supportive care, particularly around, I suppose the other thing that you notice if a child is unwell is their feeding might reduce or they're more irritable. So there are two other important things to watch out for.
And in terms of feeding, like, is it okay if they're maybe not as hungry as they normally are, providing they're taking in lots of liquids, or is the feeding the big indicator?
No, liquid. So I suppose particularly in those under 6 months, they're predominantly on liquid feeds. So, you know, you want to make sure that they're taking in enough to keep themselves hydrated, so that they're getting their bottles. Obviously, when they're struggling with their breathing, they find it harder to drink their bottles. So they might need smaller feeds more regularly, and it may take them longer to get through their feeds. The big indicator of hydration is that they're wetting their nappies. So if they're wetting their nappies, that's a good indicator that they're maintaining their hydration.
And what about in terms of their alertness, or how long they sleep for, if their sleeping pattern changes, are those strong indicators?
Absolutely, that's an important, always an important sign in an unwell child. If they're more drowsy than you would expect them to be, or sleeping for longer periods.
And where possible, obviously, the first port of call would be your GP. I mean, we don't want to scare people either. That's neither of our intention. So people might go, well, is this an emergency? If I spot what Dr. Falfari is talking about, is it an ED job? Or try and secure a phone call or a conversation with the GP or now, Doc?
Yeah, I suppose that depends on the level of kind of concern regarding that child. But in most instances, I would suspect that most of them come through their general practitioner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I heard a story on national radio earlier in the week of a very unwell child who was rushed to the emergency department. And obviously, the emergency services that are there for acutely unwell children, and general practice can't always respond in that immediate way. So if you have a child who you're extremely concerned about and is very unwell, then yes, that is a time to think about the emergency services. But for most cases, your GP should be able to look after you.
And it's a trust your gut situation, as always, isn't it? Go, you know,